Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Evolution of Radio. I am Matthew Aaron, www.thematthewaaronshow.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Matt Aaron Show. You can follow us on Facebook. You go to that search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show, and then you click enter, and then you click like. You can go to iTunes. You can subscribe there. It'll get sent to your iPad, your iPhone, your iPhone. Fuck your eye, whatever. I gonna steal your identity the way they're going. But yes, you can do it on iTunes as well. You can go to Stitcher. You can listen to us there. You can listen to our shows there along with Mark Maron, Adam Carolla, the BBC, American Life. I'm sure is there. I don't even know. I'm making that one up. I don't even know that one, but it could be. What else is going on? Where else can you find us as I burp to the side here? I am taped today. I'm not live today. I'm not trying to lie to you about that. I have two great interviews, and both those interviews are this today, like yesterday, with Ernie Hudson and Patricia Vaughn. This is two shows in a row that equal 2 hours, not 2 hours apiece, because we don't have Lee here and Terzo here and Chucky and Len and Alex and Anthony and the crew, you know. So this is just me talking to you for a few minutes just to kind of make this not awkward. And interviews. And the interviews today are, wow. Jay Chandrasekhar, who everyone knows is the writer, director, star of Super Troopers. He wrote Beer and directed Beer Fest, Club Dread, directed Dukes of Hazzard that made over $100 million, and directs basically every TV show you've ever named, that you've ever thought of, that's a comedy. And he has this new comedy called Really that's on Amazon Prime. You can go watch the pilot now for free, and then you vote for it, and you click, yes, I want to see more of these. And they have 12 more of them that they're going to make, or 11 more of them or something, as soon as you say, yes, I want to see more of these. Also, is From the Wisdom to Know the Difference, his passion project. This is like, and Hawaii 5-0 right now currently, and a million other things, Homicide famously. The Baldwin brother, Daniel Baldwin. Daniel Baldwin joins me. The Wisdom to Know the Difference is like his passion project. This is his dream film, He put it together himself. And then that's the thing. We're going to talk to these two guys about dreams. We're going to talk to these. Yes, I talked to Daniel about addiction and homicide and Robin Williams and all sorts of things. But I also talked to Daniel about dreams. I talked to Jay about dreams. I talked to them about raising money for their own films, going into debt for their own films, making things happen. And the difference is Daniel Baldwin and Billy Baldwin, who's outstanding, and Lou Diamond Phillips, who they're all doing favors for Daniel here to make his dream come true. And what do you know, the first three film festivals it is in, it wins Best Feature, and this Friday it's in Burbank Film Festival, and I'm sure it's going to go on to do very well there as well, and it's going to keep doing the festival circuit. So, we got these two guys, extraordinary, Jay Chandler Shaker and Daniel Baldwin. The reason we're not doing live shows this week is I'm exhausted. We finished principal photography on Bromance last week. I'm writing a movie temporarily titled The Divorcees at the moment with two other guys, two other writing partners of mine. The producers have already gone out, and I think pretty much the movie's it's halfway funded or something like that. It's crazy. It's already getting funded, and we're looking at an April shoot date for that. And it's a bigger movie than Bromance. It's a much bigger movie. And it's different. It's different. Bromance is about two guys and their relationship, and it's a very mainstream idea, but it's a thinking movie. It makes you think a bit. The Divorcees is just going to be a balls-out comedy. And the sitcom I'm doing is kind of like a mix of the two, the revision I just wrote this week. And it's kind of like the mix of the two. It's a thinker, and there's some drama to it, but there's also a lot of balls-out comedy. So, my vision here, while I keep creating things, is outside of Dine and Dash, which is kind of like its own little beast, my vision is while I'm creating things is to keep making things that are inclusive and talk about the times we're living in. But at the same time, make them mainstream and entertaining enough that they don't lose their value 10 years from now, that people won't watch it and make it feel dated. In a way, I do hope Bromance is dated in 10, 15 years and straight men and gay men are dancing in the streets together. Who knows? But I doubt it. But so I want to make films that are going to last. And at the same time, I want to make films that talk about our times and that are funny. And so the first two films and the sitcom are both kind of like these entryways into saying, here's a gay lead, here's a straight lead or a few straight leads and a few gay leads, and we're going to put them together. And pretty soon, like The Divorcees, it has nothing to do with he's gay, I'm straight, other than that's our situations. But there's no like, oh, I can't stand him because he's gay, and the gay character, oh, he's straight, what a weirdo, and they got to work together. No, it's just that's their situations. We need to make more movies like that where they're melting pot movies without it calling out to being a melting pot. and that's what I want to do. I really want to do that. Cesar Marconi, who produces the show along with Patrick Tobias, Cesar knows my plans for years have been to do these smaller comedies with ethnic casts, with all, because I know that what I want to see more of, and it's not what I'm seeing now. I know there's too much that I'm seeing in movies, and I'm not saying the movies are bad or good, or I'm not saying anything about the movies. I'm saying how they look to me. And I'm getting like one consistent voice, and I don't want to say it's a white voice or a straight white voice, but kind of. And I just feel like I want to hear more voices, more cultures, more diversity, and that's what I'm setting out to try to do. So that's the plan. So I just finished Bromance, and I'm about to play for you the Daniel Baldwin interview first. So why don't we start with that, and then I'll come back. I'll yap with you for a few more minutes, and then we'll go into Jay Chandrasekhar. That's the only way I'm not going to fuck it up is if I sing it. All right, here's Daniel Baldwin. The Wisdom to Know the Difference is the film. You can see it at the Burbank Film Festival Friday if you're in L.A. And when it comes to Chicago, I'll let you know. We'll be right back. my wheelhouse today. I got to tell you, I'm here with Daniel Baldwin right now. We're about to talk about The Wisdom to Know the Difference, which is a film that he wrote and directed, is already won Best Feature at the first three festivals it's played at, Long Beach International, Manhattan, and San Antonio. You're going to be at Burbank, my old hometown, on September the 5th, which is Friday. I mean, first of all, congratulations, brother. So far, so good.
Thank you so much. Yeah, the film is has been doing really, really well. It's been well received, so we're really excited. I mean, what can I say?
I mean, I gotta talk to you about like this whole process because I'm a recovering addict myself. So this is a film that is obviously a passion project for you, but it's a passion film for me. First, I want to talk about you started out as a stand-up comedian. Is that correct?
That's true, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, well, okay, I kind of want to touch upon that. What is it about stand-up comedians that we're all so fucked up?
You know, I think in order to be able to was a great thing, you know, rest him, Robin, who has just recently left us. And I worked with Robin and knew Robin for a long time. And
yeah.
I remember when I did an episode of Homicide,
mm-hmm.
I was the primary investigator and Robin Williams was, he was the husband of the woman that was killed. He was a tourist from like Iowa or something. And they got mugged outside of Camden Yards in Baltimore and his wife got shot in the face right in front of him. And I remember the LA Times woman saying to me during an interview, what was it like to work with Robin Williams? And I said, well, you know, people don't know that, you know, a lot of people haven't seen Awakenings and haven't seen some of the dramas and things that he did that he was so amazing. And, you know, it wasn't just John Wayne and gay guy impersonations and the big loud comedy stuff. I said, he was a brilliant actor. And the lady said, well, what was it like to get to know Robin? I said, does anyone really get to know Robin? And she looked at me and she said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, in between each take, it was the big gay character and the John Wayne impressions and blah, blah. You know, guys that are that talented usually are a little tortured too.
Yeah.
You know, at least it's been my experience, and I think that, you know, I've had a lot of my own demons to try to outrun. And so what better to do than to make you laugh at what I'm doing than to let you get to know me or me to trust and let you in that door a little bit where usually there's been some damage done before when it comes to trust issues. So why would I take that risk? It's much easier for me to deflect and be funny and the class clown and all of that other stuff than to take the chance of letting you in a place where you may hurt me again.
Yeah, and did you feel like that you were having substance abuse problems when you were a stand-up comedian too, or no?
No, I don't think I was having substance abuse problems. Most of my problems usually pertain to being addicted to Daniel. I have a Daniel addiction for sure, where I come first, and me, and you know, back then, no, I don't think I hadn't found. Cocaine yet, so
yeah.
No.
Is this addiction to Daniel coming from being in such a talented family where all four of you are extremely talented, you, Steven, Billy, Alec, and you're kind of fighting for attention?
You know, I don't know. I mean, we were very competitive as kids.
Yeah.
You know, mostly athletically. So, you know, I mean, I think anyone that looks at the hierarchy from an entertainment standpoint, you know, I'm pretty sure conversations don't take place where they go, well, we can get, you know, Dustin Hoffman, Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin, or Daniel Baldwin to star in this film, you know, so I'm pretty comfortable with where Alec is in his career and that he's the one that has succeeded. And the interesting things about The Wisdom to Know the Difference is that I wrote it and directed it, and to my knowledge, none of them have ever written or directed anything.
No.
So, you know, it's kind of been a nice thing for me to have as part of my own identity on a comparative basis. But no, let's face it, we don't directly compete with a lot of stuff. Alec's a big, huge movie star. So.
Yeah, right. Well,
I'm a working actor that can still kick the shit out of him. So.
Yeah, you're a great actor though. You are one of the best character actors going. And speaking of Baldwin's, Williams in this movie as well, along with Lou Diamond Phillips, who of course is phenomenal. Have the family seen the movie yet?
Steven came to the premiere in Manhattan.
Yeah.
Alec has yet to make a showing, and Billy, I think, will be at Burbank.
Yeah,
well,
he does
some really good work in this movie. He does some really good work.
Dude, he's on point. He's great. He's great. The whole scene where he's talking, I don't want to give too much away, but basically he plays the guy that, like, everybody knows that's been an addict at some point, who's had the guy that had their back, and he's trying to stop the addict from returning back to possibly a dangerous situation or to where their addictions lie. And, man, he plays that on point. Was there a reason you wanted to go with Billy in that role?
Well, I mean, you know, as you can imagine, in my own struggles and with addiction, you know, I wrote that for Billy.
Yeah.
So here's Billy sitting across, and when they talk about art imitating life, I've had this speech from Billy.
Yeah.
So, you know, the words may have been a little different, but certainly the reason why, you know, when you see Billy's face tighten up and he starts to well up with tears, it's because Billy's had to sit me down in the past and say, what are you doing? You know, what you need to stop now, you know, and so it was quite poignant to be in a situation to watch my little brother, who I protected for a vast majority of my young adult life, you know, portray this character who was actually the more mature one and trying to help me, you know, and it brought about a lot of emotion for me and Billy.
Yeah, it felt like it came from a real place. That's why I asked. I got to tell you, man, As an alcoholic, I think for me, like, I could still perform while I drink. I don't know how I can, but I can. You put in some great performances during some dark times. I remember you in King of the Ants, and I thought, man, Daniel Baldwin is so amazing, so great. And then, of course, he did Paparazzi around that time. You did a few things, and I'm just like, how's this guy... To help our listeners understand, how can you be such a talent on screen and we can't see the problems an addict is having on screen, off screen? You know what I'm saying? Because you're great on screen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think part of it, too, is that you're playing roles that are very dark, you know, roles, number one. Number two, you're not my makeup artist.
Yeah, right.
I sit down in the chair and she looks at me and she goes, bro, what have you been doing for the last 2 days? You look terrible. Well, I'm playing a character that's a terrible person, so let's just sell that along the storyline, shall we?
I feel you on that, brother. I was, you know, we just got done shooting our first independent film. That's another reason why. Your film just relates so much to me. It's about addiction. It's your own passion project. And I want to talk about how this got going, because for our film, I mean, I've been struggling with alcohol for years. And, yeah, there's days where you show up and they're like, oh, man, we need to put extra makeup on them. So let me ask you about the financing for this film. What did you do to go about to get financing for this film? I noticed are you a producer on this film? I didn't see if you were or not.
Yeah, I am.
Okay.
I went to some friends. You know, here, and it's funny because I think a lot more films are getting done this way now because the market is shrinking up so much. There's either, you know, films that are done for a very small amount of money or films that are done for $100 million.
Right.
Certainly we're not one of those. So I put together under $100,000 and I shot the film, you know, through friends. And then I asked favors of Billy and Lou. I mean, these are all actors that make more than $100,000 just to act in a film.
Sure.
So, you know, I had to call in some favors. It was a passionate film that I really had wanted to make. So, of course, none of us really made any money on the movie. You know, we're waiting to see how it did. And everyone, you know, around me, of course, was like, let's sell the film now. It came out really well. And I said, no.
Sure.
For this small of amount of money, you got to wait now, you know, and let it run its course in the festivals and everything. And I'm glad people had faith in me and listened to me, because we're 3 for 3 now. And we're going into Burbank on a pretty good roll. So, we'll see how we do at the Burbank Film Festival. We'll see how the picture does there.
Isn't that incredible, though, man? I mean, I'm so proud of you, dude. 3 for 3 out of the gate. Out of the gate. That's fucking, man, you should be so happy right now. I got to imagine right now in your life, you just got to feel so much better than you did 10 years ago. I mean, right? Am I crazy?
Yeah. I can't tell you how much, but bro, I'm laying next to my sweetheart right now. We're taking a little nap after I'm done with this interview. We're going to do Fox News after that. Then we're going to the pre-party. Then we go to the opening. Then we go to the award show. Yeah, God is good, bro. I mean, it really is. It's a beautiful thing.
And by the way, the acting ain't slowing down either. You got Hawaii 5-0 all year. I mean, so for people that know, you're recurring on Hawaii 5-0, correct?
Yeah, I'm going back end of October. Looks like Frank Delano rolls into town trying to take some skulls again, baby. Watch out.
That's great. What else you got going on, Daniel, after this flick? Do you want to make another film?
I have eight other films coming out in the next 18 months.
Oh, man.
I've been really, really busy.
That's great. Are you going to direct another film, you think, anytime soon?
Yeah, I've got a couple things. I'm actually writing this film right now about a murder that takes place in Los Angeles. It's a pretty interesting script. So I'm gonna bang this one out on the next probably the next 6 weeks. I'll be done with it, and I'm thinking I might shoot this here in Southern California. So I'm pretty excited. Really cool little murder mystery, like an old Mickey Spillane kind of.
Oh, that's great. You know, I was also going to ask you about the darkness of your film, because you could have just made a film where it's an addict trying to save another addict from themselves, and it could have been like, you know, When a Man Loves a Woman or whatever. But you put in this thriller aspect to it, this suspense aspect to it. Now, did that come from I'm Daniel Baldwin, a creative writer, or did that come from... You're writing a metaphor in a way of what people go through when they go through these kinds of these problems. Because I saw it as both.
I think a little bit of it's metaphorical, and the other part was it's loosely based on the adventures of a friend of mine. But when I could take some creative license to make it a little bit more suspenseful, because the great thing, the most important thing, bro, about the film is that, you know, I've been in films that were nominated for 13 Academy Awards in one film. You know, I've been in some pretty big stuff and some pretty big TV stuff, and, you know, a lot of little ones too, and some real stinkers. And, you know, I've had that kind of career that you never know, and like any actor, but I keep working. This film will be probably the first and very probably the only film I ever say will actually help save someone's life. Now, I don't know what award you could win that would be more important than being able to say that your participation in the film helped save another human being's life. This film helped open SOBA, Texas, S-O-B-A, Texas, which is a sober living rehabilitation center in San Antonio, Texas. It's directly affiliated with the Sober Recovery Center in Malibu, California, where I got sober. My friend Greg Hanley is an executive producer on the film. He put up almost all the money for post. And, you know, just a really good guy who, had I not met him, I probably wouldn't be alive today. So, you know, I can't tell you how proud I am of that fact. You know, I mean,
no,
much more than any accolade.
I totally understand that the film we're making right now is about the relationships between straight and gay men as friends. And I already told people, I'm like, this is already a success, because I got four of my friends who were kind of homophobic Italian Chicago guys to finance this film with me. And that was like a win in itself for me. And then anything going further, if some kid feels comfortable being gay after seeing this film, or a closeted straight man feels comfortable after seeing this film, I feel like it's a victory. So I should ask you then, how do you follow it up? Because that's the next thing on my mind, where it's like, oh man, you just did this like great piece of art in a way, because you're going to help out people. How do you do the next one?
You know what? I mean, I've given this analogy before. You know, here comes Billy Bob Thornton, and he's been acting for, you know, 30 years or something before he does Sling Blade. And then he does Sling Blade, and everyone goes, wow, that Billy Bob Thornton's a really good actor.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, I've been from Homicide to 120-something movies now in my career, and, you know, and stand-up comedy.
Well, I'm just so proud of you, brother. I love success stories like this. They're inspiring to people like me. I mean, your story is definitely an inspiration. You should be really excited and really proud, man. I don't even have that much more to say to you. I'm just so blown away by this job you've done.
Well, Well, listen, man, you got to know how to get in touch with me. I want to see your film when it's ready to come. Let me know.
I'd love to, brother. I think my producer that set this up can arrange that. I'd love for you to see it. That would mean everything.
Yeah, man. When you're at a festival or you're going to premiere, let me know, man. I'll shoot down, make sure I support
you. Well, you're in L.A., right?
Yeah, I'm in L.A.
Oh, we'll be doing the L.A. festivals. Don't worry about that. Yeah. We will let you know for sure. I mean,
and you're in Chi?
Yeah, well, I'm in Chicago right now. I live in L.A. and Chicago. I'm in Chicago making this movie the last 7 months. I've been like, and I'm waiting to do post right now. We just finished principal photography the other day.
Good.
Yeah.
That's right. I can shoot into Chi-Town for the secret screening. Don't worry, let me know.
That would be great, brother. I gotta tell you, usually I do like an hour long interview, but I know you're with your girl and you got your interviews coming up and you got the festivals, and I mean, I just want people to know how special this kind of film is. And by the way, it's always great when a filmmaker comes along and makes something this personal. And I mean, because that's art, man. This is art. I mean, I don't want to sound pretentious about it, and I don't want people to be scared off by the word art, because it's a fucking suspenseful movie. But I mean, this is art.
You know, I tell you this, when you watch the movie, I say two things. I say, remember that what happens to the kid actually happened to my friend exactly as I filmed it.
Oh, man.
I'm going to tell you that that's a true thing that happened to the 7-year-old boy. And then number two, I say, if at the end of the movie, even a tough guy doesn't feel like he wants to cry, and most chicks will cry, then I failed. And when you watch the movie.
Man, I'm
and most people go, and most people are all welled up or crying at the end of the movie, and then the rest of them go, dude, that really happened to that kid? I'm like, yes, my friend that happened to in that bathtub. So it's pretty heavy.
Yeah, and by the way, you do have a movie coming out. You did a movie with our buddy Sean Astin, didn't you, recently?
Yeah, Out West.
Out West, and you got to work with. Did you get to work with Sean?
I didn't work much with Sean. I mean, I've known his mom forever.
Right.
So yeah, I really love his mom.
What a great family, huh? What a great family.
Yeah, Sean's a talented kid, man. He's good. I just saw him in something else, man. He was like the father in this weird little movie, and I thought he was really good.
God, he's great. He's always good. He's always good. I love seeing guys like you just keep working. In a way, we're kind of blessed that you don't necessarily have the once every couple of years Alec puts out a big movie, because I get to see you all the time. So, and same with Sean, and we love.
Well, yeah, the good thing about it, bro, is I keep waiting for them to catch on, and then I'm gonna have to start humping wood and banging nails again, and I don't want to do it.
I got to tell you, they definitely caught on with Homicide, brother, because I grew up watching Homicide. I was like 14 when that came out. No, I was 12. And I was watching Homicide like every week, and I knew you were a great actor then. I always wanted to be an actor, so I was watching even that young. And you and Ned Beatty, I mean, come on.
Ned's the man. He's so talented, bro.
Yeah, you know what? Since I do got you on the horn, I never got to ask, why'd you leave the show? I wasn't that old.
I'm going to tell you, they came to me and they talked to me about going into season 4, and they said, listen, I asked them, well, what do you have planned for the character? You know, we had this kind of each actor had a meeting with the producers, and they said, well, we think we're going to open up with you back in the bars or drinking again. And I said, you know, bro, I don't want to do that. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I played the guy who was the alcoholic, and in real life it was hard imitating life, and I was struggling, and now I'm sober. I said, make my character gay. Make me something, you know, do something
right.
Different. You know, I don't care. Like, I got a big secret. I only tell Melissa Leo, and I don't tell anyone else that I'm actually having a relationship with a guy, or I'm stealing stuff. I'm dealing. You know, I don't want to go backwards. I don't want to ever go backwards in life either. You know, I mean, I've been there and I've done this. And they were like, well, the first couple episodes are written. We're gonna have you drunk. And I said, I'm not interested in coming back and doing that.
Yeah, and
I guess they didn't think that. And Ned and I both said, we're done. You know, and so, I mean, to their credit, the show ran for many years after that and everything, but I just wasn't interested in doing the same thing that I had done in season 1 and 2, and then started to get change in season 3, and I evolved into this other guy, and then they wanted to bring me back. That was just easy writing for them, you know?
Yeah.
That wasn't something.
But how, it was so at I, least, I, it had to be really cool to come back for that last scene, though, right? When you guys are all in heaven. Yeah, in the movie.
Yeah, when we're ghosts.
Yeah, when you're ghosts or you're whatever you're supposed to be at that point. I mean, that was a really cool scene. You had to be cool with that.
Yeah, it was definitely cool to come back then. You know, I mean, they could have had me come back as my long lost twin.
No, I love it, man. I love that show, and I mean, you were a powerhouse on that show too. I mean, yeah, I'm glad people are taking notice of this film and taking notice of you, like you said. But we've noticed you forever, man.
Thank you, bro.
Yeah,
thanks so much.
Thank you, Daniel. And anytime you want to do the show, let me know.
Okay, bro. God bless you. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good day.
All right, man. God bless.
All right. That was Daniel Baldwin. You, of course, can see him on Hawaii 5-0 starting in September 26. I believe he's coming back on in October. And The Wisdom to Know the Difference, which is playing the festival circuit right now. What a hot, hot film. You just gotta stay tuned for that. A passion project of Daniel's. And, I mean, there's nothing really else to say about the guy. I have always thought he's an amazing actor. Like I brought up King of the Ants, I mean, he gives a sleazeball performance in that movie. My friend and I were watching King of the Ants, and he gives this performance in that movie. By the way, George Wentz in that movie. A little low-budget horror movie, right? But it's great. What a fucking trippy fucking movie that is. And he gives this performance in that movie where you look at each other, me and my friend, and we're both alcoholics, and we look at each other and we go, man, Daniel is playing a sleazeball, yeah. But, I mean, how far is he from that? Because it was just so real. It is so real. And that's during the time where things were rough for him. And, I mean, I totally get it. I mean, there was a scene in this film where with the film that we just did, Bromance, where I'm drinking. And I mean, I got to tell you, man, you have a few, and I don't know, you just become this other thing. You just become a demon, and a demon that could still perform, because that's what demons do. Demons, they always say the devil, about how the devil, you'll never know. You know, you'll never know he's the devil because he's that good at being the devil, and like, these demons, they can haunt you, but you can still perform. That's why so many actors, actresses, celebrities are such talented people, even when they're addicts. So, I mean, what a killer film. And once again, The Wisdom to Know the Difference, which is going to be at some point on VOD and in theaters, but you got to check it out on your festival circuit right now. It's going to be at Burbank, September 5th, Burbank Film Festival. And Daniel, what a cool dude, man. What a cool dude. And so that was great. And thank you, Daniel Baldwin, for joining us. One right there. What a great interview that was. That was just a lot of fun, blah, blah, blah. I mean, how else do you set up? The guys, that's hot. That's a streak right there. Three in a row. Passion project. Recovery story. Success story. Daniel Baldwin. I mean, wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. And he's always been one of my favorites. And I'm so glad he's doing well. He's not doing any of the drugs anymore, and, you know, things are good. And, yeah, if you didn't know, the guy was going to be a stand-up comedian. Man, could you imagine if a Baldwin was a stand-up comic right now? So, Jay Chandrasekhar. And, by the way, the Daniel Baldwin thing real quick. You know, he did that movie they just did for under $100,000. It looks like a multi-million-dollar film. You can do that nowadays. And, he called in some big favors from guys that aren't that cheap. And, you know, it worked. It worked. But anyways, that was a great story. The Robin Williams thing was, yeah, it was a, it's all on the money. Daniel Baldwin knows what he's talking about. And it's just great to hear those kind of stories. Jay Chandrasekhar. All right, Jay's coming on right now. I'm going to play that interview for you. And when I come back, I'll wrap the show up, and that'll be it for today. I mean, nice and breezy. You don't have to. It's not the male version of The View today. Okay, so here is my interview with Jay. And please go to Amazon Prime and watch Really with him and Sarah Chalk. and Selma Blair, and please vote for it so they make a lot more of them. Okay. All right, this is Matthew
Where
Aaron
are you from?
Here.
Is this from Chicago?
Yeah, this is Chicago. Isn't it?
Nice.
Are you a Chicago kind of guy? Have you been here often?
I'm from Hinsdale.
You're from Hinsdale? Well, here we go. Here we go. We're about to really throw down now. I'm in Downers Grove, bro.
I went to Avery Coonley School in Downers Grove for 10 years.
Shut up. You went to that smart private school no one can get into.
That's the one.
Let's start this off. I'm here with Jay, and I swear to God, I could get your name. I swear to God. Chandra Shek.
Well, you know, interestingly, that's how you would pronounce it if you were in India. That's how they pronounce it there.
Oh, how do you
Chandra Shekar.
Okay.
But here, we pronounce it Chandra Shekar.
Wow! All right. I'll do the Indian way. all right. So you're a Hinsdale guy. What the fuck? This threw me off. And of course, everyone knows you've directed pretty much every comedy TV show the last 10 years, and then of course Super Troopers and Beer Fest and Dukes of Hazzard. And I mean, you're a really talented guy, from stand up to doing Club Dread and the improv stuff you guys do. And now you got Really, and that's an Amazon Studios project. And I want people to have a heads up on this that listen to the show here. Amazon Studios puts out a grouping of pilots every once in a while, and they basically tell you, go watch these pilots and choose which ones you want to see a series of. And Really is a great pilot with yourself and Sarah Chalk and Selma Blair. And that's one you could go watch right now and vote on. Am I correct? I got that right.
That's right. You go to Amazon. Amazon Prime is the name of their like movie watching and TV watching service. And they, and you know, right now they've got 5 new shows, and you can pick any of them to watch. Hopefully, you'll watch Really. And if you like it, you're allowed to rate it. You're allowed to make comments. You know, I read a lot of them.
That's crazy.
I'll tell you this. I will say it's a show that I made sort of in reaction to, like, I've done a ton of network television. Like, I've done Arrested Development. I've done Community. I've done New Girl. I've done just tons of, like, 70 shows I've shot. And the thing is that in network, you end up reaching a wall of what you're allowed to talk about. And these are great shows with great writers and great actors, but you can't really speak like you really speak in real life. And I said, well, what if there was, you know, the other thing was, I've become a huge fan of all the dramas, like Walking Dead and Game of Thrones and The Wire and, you know, True Detective. And I said, you know, the people who watch those shows have kind of turned their backs on comedies because they've become a little bit predictable and they're a little safe. And I said, what if I made a show for those people, like a show that was really honest, like about what it's, you know, what it's like to sort of, you know, be married and have kids and have like a hard charging partying group of friends and, you know, like speak honestly, like about sex and race and the desire to have sex with other women and for women, the desire to have sex with other men, like speak honestly about everything. And, you know, and it, because it's Amazon, it's most close to HBO. So there's nudity and there's, you know, there's sex and there's grass smoking and booze, you know, I named it Really because I wanted it to be really honest. But
which,
I will tell you, I will warn you, if, you know, those, yeah, I mean, those who are listening, if you're offended by, you know, dirty stuff, you.
What,
oh, nice.
Yeah, but what we tried to do was, and I'm sure this is something that you know quite a bit about, is we used a lot of improv, because
yeah.
My feeling on the matter was I wrote this film about a straight guy and a gay guy and their friendship, and I never seen anything quite like this, like a bromance on screen, but with the sexual fence, if you will, in the middle. So I wanted to be able for everybody to talk from, like, themselves. They're the way real people talk. I didn't want to write it out. And so I kind of get the feeling really it is in a way like this, where you're openly talking about things that, like, you don't really hear on ABC or NBC.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I wrote about 15 drafts of this show. Like, I really wrote it out. But I tried to write it in a way that felt like conversation. And then I said to the actors, what doesn't feel like what you'd say? And they said, yeah, this one feels a little clunky. I'm like, okay, let's replace it. And I said, I can replace it or you can replace it. Let's sort of, you know, and keep it open. Because I hired so many funny, talented comic actors and just said, all right, we shot what we wrote. Let's, you know, riff. Do whatever you want. You know, and I just used the best stuff. But ultimately, you have to sort of improvise within sort of the structure of what the story is, right? I mean,
right.
You know, the danger with improv is it can get all over the place, and suddenly the structure of the TV show doesn't really work.
Right.
So we, you know, we probably had about, you know, at the end of the day, we probably had about 15% of it was improv and 85% of it was scripted. But, you know, I meant it for it to feel like people were just talking. And in fact, I told the actors, I said, don't act so much.
Right. Right. I said that all the time.
Sarah, I hired you to just say the lines like you would.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Like, the lines are what they are. The people are so sophisticated and smart, and they know exactly what's going on. Whether you say the line or not, they already know what you mean. And say half the line if you want. Just
did you
say it like
feel,
you
though, did you feel like actors, like, I mean, these guys are pros, and they've improv before, like Sarah Chalk, she's amazing. And I mean, but when you're talking to actors like that, and you're like, I want you to be you, is it kind of like hard for any of them to realize what you mean by being you?
No, because they've all done a lot of stuff, and a lot of them have done the Improv Olympic in Chicago or the Groundlings or those kind of things, and they know what I'm talking about, right? They're you know, they know I have this joke about this, and they know they could insert three or four jokes that will fit the actual show, right? I mean, they're very comfortable sort of riffing and telling someone to be yourself. I mean, it's such a wonderful, free thing to not have to, like, okay, I'm going to be this other person. I mean, you're vaguely somebody else. Sure, I'm playing a doctor. I'm not a doctor. But you know, that's kind of hard to act. It's more like the, you know, your voice and the rhythm. I'm like, whatever your rhythm is, that's what I want.
I figured everyone that went to Avery Coonley's a doctor, so you probably pulled that off. So you guys, okay,
yeah.
Explain to me this Amazon process. I'll ask you why. I'll tell you why I'm asking. And we talk about this on the show. I sold the pilot to LD Entertainment a few months ago, and basically what they tell me is, okay, after the revisions, we're going to go shop it around. And, like, Amazon's one of those names that sometimes comes up, right? So when you wrote this, did you write this because Amazon came to you? Did a production company come to you? Did you write this on your own? Is this a spec? Explain to me the process of how this show got this far.
I wrote it. I've made 7 movies, and I've directed a lot of TV, but I've written a couple of TV show things. I rewrote one with NBC years ago, and it, you know, that didn't end up going. But I decided I'm going to make a television show because I've been such a fan of so much of this TV. And so I wrote one episode of the show, the pilot.
Yeah.
And then I said, God, I wonder if there are more stories to tell. And so I wrote 5 more. And I said, okay, I know I can make a TV show out of this. And so I refined the first 3, and then I showed them around town. I showed them to Amazon and all the places. And Amazon was sort of the best situation for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but they knew what happens in episodes 2 and 3. They already know. And so the decision was easier for them because they said, okay, I see the whole arc of this first season playing out in the first 3. And so that was, to me, that's a good strategy because, you know, you're stuck in Hollywood with pitching and saying, and then they're going to do this, and then it's going to be funny like this, and it's going to be real, and the actors are going to speak like themselves, and you're like, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
Right.
The more you can lay it out on paper and go, this is what it is. If you like this, do it. If you don't like this, Don't do it.
Well, no, that's exactly right, because I get hired to write a half-hour pilot, and I end up writing this 54-page pilot, and they're like, cut it down, and I'm like, no, it's two episodes. That's what it is. Now you got an idea of what the show is and where it's going. And it's like a lot of free labor, because I'm assuming you wrote like these five episodes. These are like, this is all on spec for you outside of the one, because you need this show to get picked up by Amazon, which, by the way.
It is free labor.
Yeah.
It is free labor, but I'll tell you something. The competition is fierce out here.
Yeah.
And by the way, I'm one of the people who they're excited to have walk in the room, right? And
right.
It's fierce. And so to me, like a lot of famous writers and directors, they go through this process, they go out and pitch a show, and it doesn't get bought.
Right.
It happens all the time. It's hard for everybody. So to me, the more I can say, look, I'm not going to try to con you into making this. I'm not going to try to pitch you on what it is. This is it. If you don't like this, don't do it.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, it's free labor, but it worked.
No, I don't blame you at all. I don't blame you at all. Now what happens when this show gets picked up? Are you going to have the four episodes that you already wrote? Are those the next four? Is that the plan?
If they pick it up, yeah, I would shoot those four. And then when they pick up shows, they order nine more so that they have 10 total. So you'd have the one that we already made plus nine. And then that's the season. And then they seem to be planning to release them all at once. They picked up a show called Transparent. I think they're shooting it now. I think they're going to release it all at once.
No, go ahead. You were saying, go ahead.
Yeah, that's all. But my show is, it has to get rated well, and and if it gets rated well, then it'll get picked up. Right now, it's definitely only in the pilot phase.
No, listen, we're going to be sharing the shit out of it. It's great. I mean, Selma Blair she's such a great talent, and she really deserves something this good. So, I mean, that alone right there is like, come on, I want to see more of this.
She is a super talent.
Oh,
she
my
really
God,
is.
She's great. She's a great comedian. I didn't know for how many years she was an actress that she was so funny. I didn't know for a long time.
Yeah, she's funny. She's really funny.
Sharp.
And when you get her going, like at a restaurant or something, she's a riot.
Oh,
Just a riot.
I bet. And, when we all love Sarah Chalk and we all love the work she's done. You shot this in New Orleans, right?
I shot it in New Orleans. It's meant to take place in the northern suburbs in Lake Forest, Illinois, where I went to high school.
Okay.
I went to Lake Forest Academy. And it's meant to be that these couples all live in Lake Forest. But I went to the suburbs of New Orleans, which looks, frankly, a lot like Lake Forest, and shot there. I mean, if the show were to go, I would either shoot the whole thing in Chicago. They're trying to get a rebate there for, a tax rebate,
yep,
which is one of these things that we went to New Orleans because they give you a rebate check.
Absolutely.
For shooting there. They give you like 25% back. Chicago's working on that, and if that happens, we would be able to shoot it there. And if not, I think I would, that show Shameless, they shoot about 2 weeks there and about 8 weeks.
Right, and then the rest in L.A., I believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or is it? Yeah. They'll shoot like 2 weeks here, a bunch of exteriors and stuff, Let me ask you, because I don't think my fan base and the people listening there, your fans, they probably know this, but my fans may not. To explain how you got started with the business, because I think the story's really fascinating, actually.
Well, I was an actor in high school at Lake Forest Academy, and then I went to college at Colgate University. I was an actor there. And I was also, doing the Improv Olympic in the summertime in downtown Chicago.
Yep.
And I had started doing stand-up when I was about,
yep,
I think, 8, 9. So I was involved in the funny business, and I typically got laughs with my pals. I felt pretty good about being funny. And then, what happened was I was graduating, and I'm like, if I go try to be an actor, I said, the only actor out there right now that is Indian is Ben Kingsley. I mean, he's the only one. And the guy won the Oscar for Gandhi. And I'm like, if I don't, he's the only guy. Like, there was a movie called Short Circuit, which was this guy named Fisher Stevens played an Indian guy.
Yep.
you know, Hank Azaria plays Apu on Simpsons.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like, there were no Indians. So I said, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to kind of have to make my own game in a way. And so I decided to start a comedy group, and maybe we'll do what Monty Python did. And so we started performing at Colgate, and luckily it was sort of a, you know, there was nothing like it at Colgate, and it was a big hit. And so when we graduated, we moved to New York and kept doing it. And so we did stage shows, and in between the sketches, we would shoot short films, like 2 to 5 minute films. And they were really crude in the beginning and really poorly made in the beginning, but we made them ourselves, so we learned. I learned how to direct and how to edit and how to zoom and light. And you just, every time you're like, wow, that's so bad. I think I can make it better this way, and the next video is better. And eventually, I took a film class at NYU, and then we made a short film with real film instead of video. And then, you know, at the time in the 90s, the independent film scene was hopping. I mean, Kevin Smith and Rick Linklater. Rick Linklater had made Slacker. Kevin Smith had made Clerks. Eddie Burns had made Brothers McMullen. Whit Stillman had made Cosmopolitan. Yep. So there was a chance, if you could put some money together, that you could make a movie. And if you could get that movie into Sundance, well, things were happening for people like that. So we made this film called Puddle Cruiser, which we shot at Colgate. And, you know, we raised money through friends and family, and then the credit card companies thought I was a doctor for a while, and we put 70 grand of debt on a credit card. Mm-hmm. And we finished this movie, and we got into Sundance, and, you know, it was the hit. And, you know, we made Super Troopers, and we sold that at Sundance, and, you know, life has been great ever since.
Listen, I love the fact that it's just crazy. The reason I wanted to tell the story is we talk about this all the time, and you and I have a very similar story from growing up here in the suburbs of Chicago to stand-up comedy at a younger age, and I did Second City, you did Improv Olympic, and now I'm doing my first feature. I'm a little older than when you did yours, but I mean, it's great to see someone else that has done it, and you kind of have this like, oh my God, Jay did it, so maybe I got a shot.
I'll tell you something. You know, the problem with the film business is that everyone's like, oh, that must be so hard to make it, and it is, and it's incredibly competitive.
Yep.
It is. However, people who actually go and make stuff are the ones who get called to make other stuff.
Yep.
Because when these studios need to release movies, and they're like, well, let's get that guy who did that cool indie, and let's give him this movie because he's a good filmmaker and he's a good storyteller, and let's, you know, that's how it works. But people who sort of go, well, I hope someone gives me a chance, and someday maybe I'll make this, and all this stuff, those are the people who sort of, you know, unless they get incredibly lucky, those people typically don't, you know, they're in the even harder situation because they're hoping for someone to hand it to them versus going and making it, regardless of how cheap it is. You know, you can get it out online, and sometimes these things take off. I mean, you never know.
Yeah. No, you know what I noticed, too, I was curious about, because you see a lot of directors that, you know, maybe they're like drama directors, and we're not making a lot of thriller movies and suspense movies, so they go into TV like John Dahl does and a bunch of other people. Okay, cool. But you were making hit movie after hit movie comedy-wise, and then you started doing TV, but it wasn't like your career was slowing down at all. What was it that brought you into TV?
Well, you know, I had made, when we first made the first film I made, was called Puddle Cruiser, and it was a college comedy that we shot at Colgate. That film was a big hit at Sundance, and NBC executives were in the audience, and they said, would you make that into a TV show? And we said, yeah, we would. We said, we won't act time. And they're like, we want to hire like 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
And they said, okay, that's odd. We figured you guys would just say you'd want to act in it. But we said, yeah. So we right out of the bat, we made this half-hour show for NBC. It was incredibly well-received. It literally came inches from getting picked up. I met the president of NBC in his office in New York like the day before they were going to announce it. And he goes, I'm thinking real seriously about this, but you're 25. He goes, can you really do this? And I'm like, yeah, man, I could do it. I mean, I had no idea how to make a 26-episode season or any of that. And he must have clued into that because he's like, I can't do it, buddy. I'll give you another deal for another show, but I can't do it. And so we made that pilot, and you're like, okay, that's something. TV is, you know, and then we got a deal with ABC to write something. And, you know, we were in TV right away from the beginning. And I took a little sort of break for a while because I was making movies. And then a friend of mine, so the NBC pilot I made was called Safety School. It's about college,
okay.
Right? So my friend Judd Apatow saw Safety School after it was rejected, and he said, oh, that would be a good show. They should have done that. And so he called me and said, will you come look at the show and declare it I'm doing, and which is the college comedy.
Yeah, I mean, great show.
But and so I directed four of those. And then Fox called me and said, would I do Arrested Development? I did four of those. And then, you know, I became known as a working comic television director, and they have need for that.
Yeah, I mean, you do everything, man. You do everything. That's crazy for me.
Shows, so,
you are like one of the busiest men, though. I mean, I feel like Jay's a successful guy. He doesn't need to be that busy. Do you just love working that much?
I decided about 5 or 6 years ago that I was just going to say yes. You know, like, it's not a matter of, you know, it's got to be good. And all these shows are of a high quality.
Oh, yeah.
They may not be exactly the show I would make or exactly whatever, but they're high quality. They're on major networks. They're, you know, this is like high-profile stuff. And I'm like, I'm going to just say yes. And what happened was I met so many great writers. I met so many great actors. And now when I need somebody to go into a movie, I just say, hey, and I know their number. I know their email. I know them directly. If I need for movies, I've worked hundreds of them in television shows.
Yeah.
It's just expanded my reach. And by the way, you know, in 70 television shows, I've probably shot 15 parties, right? So I've shot them with long lenses. I've shot them with wide lenses. I've shot them, you know, I've shot them handheld. I've shot them on tripods. I've shot them every which way you can. And now in a movie, when I shoot a party, it's exactly because I've shot it 15 times that I know exactly how I want to shoot it. How many extras have to be there, and how big room is to be. You know, it's like
television makes
you work quickly and makes you go, oh, here's how you do this. I know how to do that. All these effect shots. It's a very like very quick medium because you like you're hired, you prep it, you shoot it. It's on the air in 2 weeks after that. So
no, it's great. It's great. I mean, that's great that you got all that down. I was going to ask you about one of the shows that you've directed a lot of episodes of course, is Blue Mountain State, and there was that big campaign to make a movie of it. Are you going to be involved with that in any way?
At the moment, I'm the official director of that movie, and we have to work out the deal and all that, but, I mean, I'm good pals with those guys, and we had a great time in Montreal, and they have a big chunk of the money, and I hear things are going pretty well for the rest. So
that's great.
I think it's going to all work pretty well. Yeah, I mean, I talk to them all the time. So,
and then
it's just a question of when.
Yeah,
when.
That's what I was going to ask. Is it a question of when on Super Troopers 2 as well, or what's the deal with that?
You know, that one we are what I believe are the close end game negotiations of the money for that. So. I think it'll happen. We, you know, could happen as soon as this winter. We may shoot it. It's possible.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, you probably got my favorite career in all of Hollywood. Honestly, because you can go out and do stand up whenever the hell you want. You can go direct a TV show, and I mean, you're involved in great shows. That's why I want people to understand too. It's not like Jay's just saying yes to whatever. I mean, from Community to New Girl to Happy Endings to Psych to Chuck. I mean, you were doing all the great shows. So I mean, and you did the Loop. I mean, which unfortunately wasn't bigger than it should have been.
Right.
I mean,
that was a great show.
Yeah, and then you get to act as well. And, like, you know, everybody, it's just like the best career, man. It's awesome.
I'll tell you what, I have my favorite career, too.
That's great. I hope so.
Exactly what I want to be doing.
I hope so, man.
I love it.
You're killing it. Well, okay, really? You go to Amazon Prime, everybody. Go to Amazon Prime. You watch the pilot of Really. It's Sarah Chalk, it's Selma Blair, and it's Jay, and they're funny as hell. But if you like girls, were you like Lena Dunham style, or are you like Joe Swanberg style, or are you like the Duplass brothers, then you'll like this show. You'll also like it if you enjoy Ed Burns and Woody Allen and Albert Brooks and those kind of auteurs. You will really enjoy this show. So
I just wanted to plug
that for you. That's a big deal. Everyone's got to see Really. And give it a vote, because we'd love to see more of it. And I mean, Jay, it's great to have you on, man. And another suburbs guy. So I'm in Downers, right? Where I'm at right now. That's why we're talking on the phone.
Nice.
Yeah, lucky
me. I just want to repeat one more thing, though. It's
Please.
Not your class.
No.
The rhythms are not, they're not sitcom rhythms. Every scene doesn't end with a joke. It's not super bright and sunny. There's some drama in it. But
no,
yes. It's meant to be a new kind of comedy.
No, and then, listen, I need your show to do well, because that's in very similar vein to what we're doing right now with the show I just sold. And also, like I said, Girls is very much like that. So, I mean,
Girls is a great example of it.
Yeah, so
absolutely.
If you enjoy a show like Girls, you're really going to enjoy Really. And you should go check it out over at Amazon Prime. And they're putting out interesting stuff, but definitely check this one out and give it a vote. And Jay would love your comments and everything, I'm sure, too. He could read them all.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, brother, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
Okay, bye now. All right.
That was Daniel Baldwin, Jay Chandrasekhar. Go see The Wisdom of Knowing the Difference is at the Burbank Film Festival Friday, and you can catch that at festivals near you soon, and then hopefully video on demand and the whole nine yards. But also, Jay Chandrasekhar, go to Amazon Prime, go watch Really, Selma Blair, Sarah Chalk, and Jay. Like it so they can make more of them. Leave your comments for them, too. What a great story. Jay, you hear that? $76,000 in debt on his first movie. Whew. And we get mad because our first project, we went over our budget like $1,000 or $2,000 or something. And for Bromance, we're literally at our budget. We would have came in $5,000 under budget if it wasn't for the incident we had with a previous actor. You know, when the guys are like, oh, it came in right at budget, I'm like, bro, could have been worse. How about $76,000 in debt? That's all I'm going to say. So that was our show for today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please, www.thematthewaronshow.com. Check out all our episodes previous to this. Another quick and easy hour long. You probably could have gone and gotten Chinese food and sat on the toilet by now and had your shit and everything, and the whole show would have been wrapped up. So, congrats. And God bless Joan Rivers, unfortunately passed. Robin Williams passed before we could talk about him as well. So, Robin Williams, Joan Rivers, unfortunate. And our condolences from the Matthew Aaron Show. Anything else I'm forgetting? No, I don't think so. We'll be back next week. Thanks, guys.